Welcome to This Justin, the show bringing you the latest advancements in healthcare, strategy, innovation, and public policy. And now, for the fastest voice in healthcare, here's your host, Justin Barnes.
Thank you for tuning in, and welcome to This Just In. I'm your host, Justin Barnes. In these segments, I'll bring you the latest advancements in healthcare, strategy, innovation, and public policy. As always, we're broadcasting from the This Just In studios on the Business Radio X network, as well as the Healthcare Now radio network. For this episode, my 204th episode, we have a very special guest hailing from Boston, where we'll discuss a little health policy, as well as a little industry strategy. Joe Ganley, Vice President, Government and Regulatory Affairs for Athena Health. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Thanks, Justin. Thanks for having me.
You got it, my friend. So first of all, how are you doing?
You know, I'm doing all right. I've two little children. So the pandemic has created a homeschooling and different home dynamic for sure. But we're doing all right. Everybody's healthy, thank God. And we're fortunate to be able to manage our kids and still keep up with our work. So we're doing well. How about you?
Fantastic. Actually, I've fared just wonderfully through this, just from a standpoint of, being able to be home more. I was traveling almost every other week down to one of my companies in Florida. So it's just that was, a nice to be able to have a respite from that and be here and be in Atlanta. I'm at Atlanta, but I was pretty much virtual based anyhow. I can record my radio show remotely. I have a studio here in Atlanta, but rarely go to it, even, non-pandemic times. I was only going to it probably four or five times a year when we did bigger shows with multiple guests.
Yeah.
So I've enjoyed it. Now, don't like having a pandemic, but I do love the shift. And you and I talked about this a little bit off air and a couple weeks ago, but I love the shift towards telehealth, virtual care. This is where healthcare, should have gone long before now. From a cost standpoint and a quality of care, there's just so many attributes and positive components to what's happening in healthcare today. It took a pandemic to get us there. But the good thing is you and I worked together for many years in the Hill, and a lot of your hard work and others in the industry is we've paved a way for us to, for when COVID hit, we had so much telehealth and virtual care and other components that were already, the foundation was already laid. So we could just build upon it. So that's pretty terrific, I think.
So. Yeah, I think that's right. I think that, the way the healthcare system has responded to this pandemic has really been unbelievable in a good way. Obviously the frontline caregivers who have sacrificed so much to be able to, treat their patients and deal with, the increase in cases has been obviously remarkable, and they're heroes for sure.
Yes.
But I think that, maybe behind that, as you look at how the healthcare system has adapted, and how policymakers have adapted, frankly, with a lot of flexibility from the federal government. I think you're right. In some ways, the pandemic was a tipping point for, the kind of connectivity and virtual care that I think people have been clamoring for in healthcare for a very long time. And the pandemic made it absolutely necessary because people couldn't go to their primary care doctor for elective, treatments. But I certainly think that could be a little bit of a silver lining that it maybe took a pandemic to cause the healthcare system to accelerate in that way.
Yeah. Well, as we spoke a couple of weeks ago regarding that McKinsey study, where 76% of consumers were highly or moderately likely to use telehealth in the future. I mean, that's significant. I mean, they're ready for it. They're prepped for it. We have those types of functionalities and other aspects of our lives. And now we've got it injected into, our care strategy, and people want it. People are using it. Patients are using it. So,
yeah. I mean, I think you really hit the nail on the head there, Justin, when you said other aspects of our lives, right? I mean, I always use the analogy. I say, when I was a little kid, my dad used to say he was going to the bank. I remember on Saturday mornings, he used to go down to the bank. He'd deposit his paycheck and he would say, "I'm going to the bank." And the bank was a place that you went on Saturday morning, right?
That's right. Yes.
Bank is now a verb. We don't go to the bank. We bank. We bank on our phone. We bank on our tablet. We bank on our computer. We bank. I can deposit checks by taking a picture of them, right?
Yes.
There's truly almost no need to ever go to the bank. You can even get a mortgage online these days. Healthcare, I think, needs to move in that direction. Healthcare is still a place that we go. We go to the doctor. We go to the hospital. It's a physical location. And that's always going to be the case because you're always going to need to be, you know, physically examined by a trained professional in certain instances. And, you know, you're going to have surgery performed on you. And obviously those are,
yes,
that requires a physical interaction between clinician and patient. But to some degree, you know, the other day, my wife and I had a consult with our son's cardiologist, and the purpose of the consult was to give us the results and to interpret some results of some tests that he had run. And, you know, we did it on Zoom, and I had two cardiologists in two different locations. My wife and I were both there, and we were able to ask all the questions, and they interpreted the test results. And thank God my son's going to be just fine, and everybody's healthy. But when I walked away from that encounter, my reaction wasn't, wow, this is really cool that we were able to do this virtually. My reaction was, I can't imagine doing it any other way. If we had had that same consultation, first of all, the two cardiologists were in two different places, two different hospitals. Mm-hmm. So we probably wouldn't have gotten them in the same room. So we would have had two appointments. Secondly, trying to coordinate my wife and my schedule in order to be in the same place at the same time to you know, ask the thoughtful questions of the physician that we wanted to ask would have been really difficult. And so it would have probably taken a long time to get that coordinated and scheduled. Instead, we did it via Zoom. We had both cardiologists there. My wife and I were both there. There was no physical exam that needed to be done because all it was right, a conversation about test results that had previously been done. It was great. And I can't imagine doing that any other way in the future.
I couldn't agree more. And to be honest, I had a very similar episode, but actually I had helped create a health plan here in Georgia. And actually I'm a member of that health plan where we had virtual care, telehealth, but also virtual care deployed with our PCP, my PCP. So it wasn't, because telehealth before now was, you had telehealth, but it was with a doctor, not usually your doctor. At least 99% of the chances it was not your doctor. I actually started a plan a couple of years ago here in Georgia where I have that. So I actually have virtual care and telehealth with my doctor, but then also all of my specialists. So I had a weird diagnosis, imaging result a couple of years ago. And there was no problem at the end of the day, but he did this, my EKG, and said, oh, you have a little burp, I got to look at something. He called the cardiologist. The cardiologist, within an hour, got back to him. They did a quick conference call with me. I didn't do it. It was more of a telephone phone call, but it was all conferenced in less than 12 hours. I got my results. They told me everything was fine. Here's just, you know, just normal part of your hereditary, you know, of your childhood and all that kind of stuff, your parents. Yeah. So no big deal, but that was kind of, you know, instead of having to drive an hour or half an hour into the cardiologist's office, and then all that, and then go back over to the primary care doctor, have, you know, consult with him. We all consulted, you know, telephonically. And we could have done it virtually if we wanted to, and on phones if we needed to, but we didn't need to. So to your point, we didn't have to go to the brick and mortar offices. But now a lot of healthcare, I'm not saying all is moving that direction, but a lot of healthcare is shifted in that direction over the last 3 to 4 months. And I totally agree with you. I think it's phenomenal for us.
Yeah, I think it's really important. And I think it's, you know, when you think about the amount of care that goes undone, right? Mm-hmm. People who don't seek care when they probably should. I mean, I think the easier we make it for people, the more likely it's going to be from a wellness perspective that folks do those consults and have those conversations and have a more ongoing dialogue with their caregiver, as opposed to just showing up at the emergency room when something's, you know, catastrophically wrong.
Exactly. Which costs everybody, the patient, but also our system, our insurers, our country, you know, a lot more money when that happens.
Absolutely.
And when you're accountable to your doctor, that's what I found the most beneficial. I love how I've got my healthcare costs down with this model, but also I'm accountable to my doctor on a regular basis. Sure. I don't get to go 2 years without someone knowing my results. No, I mean, I report all my metrics on a monthly basis into a system, and I'm accountable to him. I'm accountable to myself, but even if you don't have that kind of discipline, you're accountable to your doctor. My doctor watches me, and he watches his patients, and he's got a panel, yeah, you know, less than 750. So he can actually do that. It's a very unique model, but that's when you're accountable to somebody else, hopefully you're going to pay attention. And so that's to your point, is you're not going to show up in the ER, hopefully, on a, right, I know, a dire emergency, and you've had no other way. So.
Yeah, no, that's right.
I agree. So, and we jumped ahead a little bit, but you and I always have great conversations. But just so my audience gets to know you a little bit more, before we dive in further, where'd you grow up, attend college, all that good stuff?
Yeah, so I grew up in central Massachusetts, about an hour west of Boston, and I went to college and law school in Boston. I wanted to pursue a career in government and public policy, and I was very much of the view that the best way to do that was to immerse myself in it while studying it. And so I went to school in Boston. I went to a school called Northeastern University, which is famous for its cooperative education program. And so while I was in school, every other semester, I worked full time at Boston City Hall for the mayor and the city council. And so it was a fun way to really immerse myself in the political environment while also studying politics in the classroom. And it's a pretty interesting program at Northeastern, and they're pretty famous for it. And I certainly found it hugely beneficial because I was learning the practical government and public policy stuff while I was at work. And then I'd go back into the classroom and we talk a little bit more about some of the theoretical elements of it. So it was a really great way to kind of study government. And I really enjoyed it. So I was there in Boston. Then I went to law school also in Boston, ultimately when I was done.
Very cool. Was that Mayor Menino days or was that before?
Yeah. Yep. No, that was Mayor Menino days. Yep. I started at City Hall in 97. I was there for a lot of the Menino years. Yeah.
Yeah. So what town did you grow up in? I grew up in Amherst. So I probably was a little, I was a little probably west of you, maybe a little southwest of you. Where were you?
Yeah. I grew up in Gardner. I grew up in Gardner, which is, along Route 2 on the way to Amherst. And is famous as it was a manufacturing town. It was a furniture manufacturing town, particularly if you've ever seen a college chair. Yeah. The two companies, Nichols and Stone and Standard Chair, which manufacture, I think, 100% of all of the college crested, you know, armchairs. All of those are manufactured. Well, I don't know if they're still manufactured there, but the companies are both located in Gardner. It was a company called Nichols and Stone and a company called Standard Chair.
Yeah. I happen to know that stuff very well because I grew up in manufacturing in that whole area. So my family owned a lot of manufacturing up in Orange, Massachusetts, Athol, Massachusetts, Sterrett's. Yeah. So that was my family. So very funny. So I know Gardner well because when I visit my grandmother in either New Salem or Orange, we would drive out to Gardner for the movie theater or Chinese food because we didn't have good Chinese.
Oh, yeah.
So I knew Gardner.
Yeah, no, it's great place to grow up. It was a great, very middle-class town and close enough to Boston, close enough to Worcester, but, but still pretty quiet, which was great.
Cool. So now my next question, and we just tackled this a little bit in our intro, but what are you seeing in the industry today? And I mean, obviously I hope we're post-COVID. We're figuring that out right now. But what are you seeing in the industry today?
Yeah. Well, you know, I see a lot of opportunity. Frankly, right? I view healthcare as, probably not the only, but certainly one of the last undisrupted industries. And that's not to say that healthcare hasn't been disrupted somewhat, but I think there's a lot more disruption to be done in the healthcare model, right? It's still operating in a, very much the same way it did, 25 years ago or 30 years ago, right? And that's not to say that we haven't made advances in medicine and how to treat illness, but the system, the sort of fundamentals of the system are very much, I think, undisrupted from what they were, several decades ago. And I think there's an enormous opportunity to disrupt it right now. And I think there's lots of folks that are in that business. And I think, I have a good friend of mine who's a healthcare venture capitalist, and every time I talk to him, he's telling me about some portfolio company that he's working with that's doing just amazing stuff in terms of kind of redefining the fundamental structure of healthcare. And I think we're just going to see tons of that. I think when you have an undisrupted industry, right, capital and entrepreneurship flows toward that opportunity. And I think over the next, 5 to 10 years, we're going to see, massive disruption. And frankly, one of the big questions, Justin, is, what's the government going to do about that? Is the government going to harness that and embrace it, and which has been the American tradition, or is it going to sort of stand in the way and sort of stymie it? And I hope that it's going to be that it's going to embrace it, and then it's going to encourage it, and that's going to put in place the public policies that kind of allow for that innovation to happen.
Yeah, I completely agree. I didn't really see that inflection point, but I agree with you that it certainly could be coming upon us. And I certainly hope that they do encourage and walk alongside. I think we've been fairly fortunate, at least, I know that we've worked a lot on Capitol Hill together. And I think we've been fairly fortunate over the last 10 years to have government come alongside and not really, and this obviously could be controversial, but I think that they've really come alongside entrepreneurs and the industry. And I think that they've, at least from my perspective, I don't want to speak for you, but I'll speak for me, is that they've enabled a lot. There's certainly some tough regulations that have been hard to deal with, But I think overall, they haven't stymied innovation. I think we've done a good job pushing back. And that was some of the FDA stuff we engaged even in, gosh, MDUFA and PDUFA back in 2009, yeah. 10, 11, and those, or maybe it was 8, 9, 10, those time frames. But just to kind of make sure the FDA had its spot, and not to get too deep into the EHR regulation, stuff like that. But I mean, anything you can comment on that?
Yeah, look, I think the 21st Century Cures legislation that I think was passed in December of 2016, is one of the great unheralded pieces of public policy that's come out of the administration. I mean, out of Congress.
Yep, yep.
And when you look at it, it does two things that to me are really important. The first is it deregulates low risk health IT. Mm-hmm. Right. So it says, yep, if you have a health IT solution, an EHR or something like that, that really doesn't have any risk to patients, we're not going to regulate it. We, the FDA, are not going to regulate it. We're not going to look at it as a medical device, which is a road, as you know, yes, they were thinking about going down earlier in the decade.
Oh, yeah.
But it sort of once and for all said low risk health IT is not going to be regulated by the federal government. That's huge. Right. Because that allows, again, the capital and the entrepreneurship to say, OK, I'm going to go into that space and I'm going to invent the next app that is going to change patients' lives, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to worry about having to navigate some complex, regulatory environment, right? So that's huge. The other thing that it did is it said information sharing and connectivity in healthcare, this is the so-called information blocking rule.
Yes.
We're going to share information in healthcare, and you're going to be required by law to do that unless you have a very good reason not to. And there are, a number of exceptions outlined in the rule, but sharing of information is going to be the rule, not the exception, right? That's also huge because that was not always the case in healthcare, right? There was a tendency in healthcare, and there still is in some quarters, to say, well, no, my patient data is proprietary, or I'm going to use it to try to keep my patients so that they only seek care at my facility or at my, right, partnered facilities. If they have to go to a specialist, I want them to go to my specialist. So I'm going to use their medical record to kind of keep hold on to that customer and keep that customer in-house. And that's really crazy, right? I mean, you want to be able to go to the specialist you want to go to that's convenient for you, that has the right bedside manner for you, and your information ought to be portable. And so in 21st Century Cures, for the first time under law, the government is saying, no, healthcare, providers, payers, health IT developers, you've got to share information. If a patient wants to go across the street to see the cardiologist, you got to send the info over to the cardiologist. You can't block it. And that's huge, right? Yes. Because it allows for, again, a liquidity of your information. It supports patient consumerism. It supports competition in the healthcare sector and connectivity, right? I think it's the most impactful health IT legislation to come out of Washington, probably since the High Tech Act. Mm-hmm. And I actually think it'd be an interesting sidebar discussion for you and I to have some time. I actually think it's more impactful than High Tech. High Tech provided a lot of funding and encouraged the adoption of EHRs. But I think, when we look back through history, I think 21st Century Cures is going to be more impactful.
Oh, I completely agree from a standpoint of enabling innovation. And then, I completely agree. But yeah, let's actually probably do it would be great to do it. We will do a follow-up radio show for sure. But
to debate High Tech versus 21st Century Cures, right? Interesting discussion.
Yes, yes. And for those joining a little late, my guest today is Joe Ganley, Vice President, Government and Regulatory Affairs for Athena Health. So as we close in here, we got about 8 minutes or so left, or seven minutes left. What are some of the top legislative and regulatory policies that we should be watching in the coming 6 to 12 months? I know we're in the silly season, or ending the silly season.
Yeah, no, we are. 6 to 12 months. 12 months is probably the better time frame.
Right.
I mean, the obvious one, right? These telehealth changes need to be made permanent, mm-hmm, right? And maybe not all of them, but the vast majority of them. The progress that COVID has created with respect to enabling and reimbursing for virtual healthcare visits, we talked about this at the top, is hugely important. And the government was, I give Seema Verma at CMS and others, and Alex Azar, enormous amounts of credit for responding to COVID so quickly with such flexibility.
Yes.
We couldn't go 3 months without people getting healthcare, and they couldn't go to their doctor's office. So what do we do about that? Mm-hmm. We enabled finally telehealth, and a lot of those changes need to be made permanent. I mean, it's not a perfect analogy, but you know, for years we wouldn't reimburse healthcare, you know, through telehealth over the phone or video at the same rate as we would do it in the office. Well, I'm a lawyer, right? So, you know, if I was practicing law and you called me to have your will done and I spent an hour on the phone with you doing your will, I would charge you the same hourly rate as I would if you were sitting in my office.
Correct.
Right? Yep. So I don't understand why we're reimbursing healthcare at a different rate. Now, it's not a perfect analogy because obviously there's some physical diagnostic and examination that happens that is different. But, you know, the idea that we're, you know, gonna sort of keep telehealth on the sidelines through a kind of arbitrary reimbursement rate is crazy. And we've finally gotten over that hump. Yeah. And I think a lot of those changes need to be made permanent. And there was a, you know, hearing in the health committee yesterday on it, and some very interesting comments were made. And I support a lot of what folks were saying. And we need to not go back, right? And I think Seema Verma was quoted recently, the administrator of CMS, as saying, I can't imagine going back. And I was thrilled to hear her say that because she's been such a leader on these issues.
Yeah, and she actually said that, I want to say in April. So she came out pretty quickly when, you know, March was over. We saw some of the initial success. I think it was the last week in April that quote came out from her. And so that was very encouraging from an industry.
Yeah, absolutely. So, absolutely. I think that's going to be a huge issue. You know, again, it's not going to be, you know, a big topic in the presidential race. It's not going to be, you know, the lead story on the news. But I think when we look back on this period, we will see that healthcare went through a pretty fundamental shift because of the advent of telehealth.
I agree. Actually, those, I mean, a little digression, but it was exciting times. Literally, we were, I mean, health IT for about 7 years was part of Bush's and then Obama's State of the Union address, which was, you know, getting health IT was a specific talking point. Again, I think Bush did at least 2 years and Obama did at least 5 or 6 years. Health IT specifically was mentioned. And so that was, you know, that's always great for your industry because we had to go through a lot of evolutions and maturity and we were able to do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Look, I mean, technology, it's sort of a cliche, but I mean, the ability of technology to, you know, influence our lives for the better.
Yep.
We've seen that in every other aspect of our lives, right? And in healthcare, it's been slow. And I think it's gaining momentum and we may be at a tipping point. I hope we are.
That will
really, you know, we'll look back on healthcare and there'll be healthcare before technology and healthcare after technology. And the fun part is you and I are right in the middle of it.
Amen. So what best practices, this show is mainly focused on best practices, that you would share with care providers so they thrive in the coming months and years?
Yeah, I mean, I think with care providers, I think that I would say, you know, I'm certainly no expert on the practice of medicine, but I think that we have to recognize that with some of the changes that have been made to the insurance markets, healthcare patients are increasingly consumers, right? They're looking at efficiencies and costs and how best to manage their healthcare out of pocket costs and also just, you know, sort of do it efficiently, right? And, you know, I think one of the things that you talked about earlier in terms of the survey results with respect to telehealth, people love telehealth. It's totally convenient, right? I mean, I had this amazing experience and I'm, you know, with my son and my reaction was, wow, is that really convenient and easy? And I wish, you know, if I were choosing a primary care doctor tomorrow, I can tell you post that experience, one of the things I'd be asking them is, what's your telehealth offering? How do you do telehealth? It's really important to me. And so I think that, as providers look at their practice, you know, they need to be thinking about what are the tools that they need in order for their patients to, you know, feel convenience and efficiency. And, you know, I mean, I work for a company that does a lot of that stuff. I mean, our goal is to take the burden off of providers so that they can spend their time practicing medicine and not worry about things like schedule density and, you know, revenue cycle management, right? We have tools to do that, and we do that for our customers, one of the largest networks of providers in the country. So, you know, I think that's if I were a practicing physician and I were thinking about the future of my business, I would be thinking about how do I put in place the tools necessary to make the healthcare experience convenient and cost effective, while maintaining obviously a high level of quality, right, for my patients. That's what I'd be thinking about.
Yep. No, that's great advice. I completely agree. I say, look at your care strategy for the remainder of this year in 2021 and 2022, because you've got to evolve your care strategy. And when I say that, I mean, you've got to make sure that you have telehealth as part of your care strategy and you know how to put it into your workflow within the, you know, integrate it into your workflow with your practice, with your other care providers, with your staff. Remote patient monitoring, remote care management. How do you deploy a virtual care strategy? So
that's right.
I completely agree. That is critical. So in our
and the good news is on all of those things, there are entrepreneurs and really innovative companies everywhere making tools to do exactly those things, right? And so there's never been a better time for looking in the marketplace for those kinds of innovative. I mean, we have a marketplace within Athena. We partner with 200 some odd companies that are in our marketplace that just it's like an app store. And the technology, you're one of them, right? You're one of your companies.
One of yeah.
And the information that's available and the tools that are available to these entrepreneurs, to these physicians, fueled by an enormous influx of entrepreneurship, is really just phenomenal right now.
Yeah. Well, I'll take a quick moment of point of privilege then to say how amazing. I actually wish the industry would move much closer to what Athena has built in the marketplace, because it's enabled certainly my main company to thrive and to serve and to be there. And we deployed 4,000 care providers 4,000 care providers in March and April alone because of how the integration is so deep and rich with Athena's API. So it's not a sales pitch at all. I'm just telling you how amazing Athena's API is and what you guys open up for companies to be successful. However, we are at time. But go ahead, say one last thing.
No, I was just gonna say thanks for the plug. But I think really that's the idea, right? Healthcare, you asked me big picture. Healthcare is moving away from a place you go into a connected ecosystem of care. Right, a thriving ecosystem where accessible, affordable care is available, and that's really the fundamental transformation I think we're going to look back on years from now and be really proud, frankly, if I could say that we were all a part of.
I completely agree, Joe. Thank you for having you joining me on air and just taking my time here, and it's so great to have you. And we'll have you back. I certainly want to continue on our conversation. And thank you to everyone for joining us today. Please tune in weekdays at 2:30 p.m. Eastern, 11:30 a.m. Pacific. As always, you can track me on Twitter at HIT Advisor and use the hashtag #ThisJustInRadio so I can respond to your comments from the show. If you miss any of this or want to hear more of our episodes, you can listen to us on Apple iTunes, SoundCloud, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, Google Play, and TuneIn. You also can check out the website we launched at justinbarnes.com. Thanks, everyone. Have a terrific week and stay safe.